Now, another BloomerBoomer.com podcast. Your host, Andy Asher, living life over 55. Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment. We believe that all men have certain unalienable rights, yet many Americans do not enjoy those rights.
As Wikipedia has it, that is President Lyndon Johnson, born 1908, died 1973, referred to as LBJ. He succeeded to the presidency following the assassination of President John F. Kennedy on November 22, 1963, completed Kennedy's term and was elected president in his own right, winning by a large margin over Barry Goldwater in the 1964 election. Well, hi, everyone. In the long life that we all lead, we know who our favorite people are in life. And then, of course, on the flip side, we all know too well about those who we didn't like at some point, where actually they seemed like an enemy to us. Well, the dictionary definition of enemy is a person who feels hatred for, fosters harmful designs against, or engages in antagonistic activities against another, an adversary or opponent. Now, that's the dictionary definition. Now, it is rare indeed not to feel that way at some time or another. So my guest today is Sharon Salzberg, who, along with her co-author Robert Thurman, they wrote a book about it, about being an enemy, or enemies. But the title might really throw you off because it's called Love Your Enemy. Well, first of all, Sharon, I want to thank you. So, it's about enemies?
And I should say enemies is not just outer enemies. It's inner habits and ways that we might feel very separate and alienated from the rest of the world. So, it's a very intricate topic.
That's a good point. We sometimes have internal enemies as well as external enemies, don't we?
Yeah, we certainly do, and sometimes the internal ones are really a whole lot more difficult for us. You know, we get such tremendous habits and we have, sometimes we don't understand the options that are really available to us. We might have a lot more choices than we might unthinkingly guess at.
Dealing with internal and external enemies. Well, you and Robert Thurman wrote a whole book about it. So why don't we start right there? How would someone begin dealing with that?
I think that's great. I went to India, actually, to learn meditation when I was 18, which was quite some years ago now. And so every once in a while, and when I went to India, I met many of my now lifelong friends, and so every once in a while I'm quite startled when somebody says, Sharon and this person have known each other for over 40 years, and I kind of jump inside like, how'd that happen? It's such a big surprise. And even with friends, you know, it's not enmity per se, but over long periods of time we might take each other for granted, we might not really be grateful enough for the gifts we bring one another, and so there's that to pay attention to as well. And we do certainly accumulate baggage as we live a life. You know, we have people who've slighted us or harmed us or ignored us. We have a physical body that is not necessarily listening to our commands, like stay well, you know, and fit. And, we have emotions that can rage within us and that maybe we haven't looked at for a very long time because we're just kind of used to it. And so there's tremendous power in becoming mindful and paying attention and I think really appreciating the people we care about and really looking at the nature of grudges and what we're getting out of it, which may be just a lot of aggravation and anxiety, in which case we work to let them go. We understand more and more how much we can't control, and it's not like we're passive and we don't care. I mean, of course we care, but we understand that maybe I will do everything I can to be in good health, and it's not that I failed, you know, terribly, and that I did something really wrong if I get sick, you know, that life is just life and has all of that. So we can look at every arena where we hold this sense of enmity and having an enemy, and we can shift, we can really change.
Well, I want to get back to that in a moment, but I would imagine when people see the title, they must some may say to themselves, oh, I can never to love an enemy. You've probably heard that. what do you say?
Well, I felt that. I have to say, in all honesty, the title was not my choice. And I was concerned about the ways people might hear it. And yet, you know, the deeper meaning is not that you approve of the enemy or, you know, you wish them to triumph or succeed. But there's a certain way in which we know, and especially I think as we get mature, we see our own lives and the mistakes we make and maybe the things that we regret, and we realize they have come for us out of a place of not understanding or being confused or old habits and being lost in them, and they come from a place of pain, basically. That's when we have caused pain to others. And so there's some of that understanding that just life gives us, and we see, well, you know, here's this person who's causing pain, who's causing difficulty. They, too, are very likely coming from a place of pain within. So it's not that I want them to succeed, but I want them to be free of that suffering, and then they will cease to cause suffering to others.
Oh, that's good clarification. Well, going back to what we were talking about here, and the fact that as we mature and get older in life, how do we work on removing some of those hurdles or barriers or baggage that may be the result of bad experiences, both internally and externally? Maybe you could just give a few tips or suggestions how people could deal with that.
Sure. Well, I think that attention is key. Like, sometimes we're fuming and we don't even quite realize it. We're just getting more tense and more stressed. And our bodies are really reacting, but we may not even be quite aware of what we're feeling. And so that's, in a way, that's the core of meditation practice, is tune in, you know, tune into what you're feeling. And part of that is tuning into motivation or intention. It's like if you're about to have a conversation or talk about somebody when they're not present, you can do like a quick check-in, like, what do I hope to get from this conversation? What do I hope will be the result? Do I want to be seen as right, or do I want to be helpful? Do I want to be harmful? Just so we know, we're aware of both what we're feeling and what our intention is, and then always, always developing greater compassion for ourselves, which is really the foundation of having compassion for others.
So I'm sure some of those tools can be addressed in my next question. But again, after a life of experiences, for some people that could include a divorce or the ending of a relationship, and those oftentimes can be very emotional. I guess the key there to move on in life is to not let those things drag you down. And two people who've been married, let's say, they may still need to have a relationship, possibly not, but if they have an extended family. How do you deal with something how like that?
Well, I have kind of a mantra. I have a saying that I really encourage people to use, which is, I have the right to be happy. Just remind yourself, I have the right to be happy. And then, you know, what is demanded is like a big investigation about where happiness actually comes from. So is it in bad-mouthing one's ex? Well, there is a kind of satisfaction, of course, that comes in a little burst. But then we're just mired in their being, you know. It's like going through the list of somebody's faults again and again and again and again. There's a quality of being stuck that really does bring us down. It's not bringing us happiness past that little first moment. Acts of, I don't know, revenge or hurting somebody in a way that we will actually regret later on, we shouldn't get confused, you know, that moment of feeling empowered is going to last. We hurt ourselves when we hurt somebody else. And so it's going from a place of strength to strength. It's not saying that you've got to get all weak and compliant and just give in, but it's having a big new sense of where strength actually lies, and be happy, you know, like the best revenge is having a really good life. It's being happy yourself.
So you have some tools. You mentioned ideas, including meditation. Are those some of the things that people can do to overcome these kind of feelings that hold you back?
Oh, definitely. I think meditation is really just attention training. It sounds, you know, esoteric or exotic sometimes, but it's really just attention training. So first of all, we have a way of anchoring ourselves back in the present moment through the breath, through awareness of what's happening right now. So when our mind starts spinning, oh, in 2 months it's going to be worse, in 5 months it's going to be unbearable, in a year, you know, we can come back to right now. And so we don't have to have the added burden of all that really speculation about the future. We can be in touch with what we're feeling. So, you know, before we go off to the computer and type out the email and press send, we can know, oh, I'm getting angry. What might my options be for how to communicate this so I get what I want? More likely get what I want, you know, rather than just lash out. If we're mindful, if we're aware, then we have more choice, because we're not just caught up in the heat of the moment. We realize we do want something. We do feel what we feel. That's true. That's integral to our understanding. And we have some space in order to try to think through the most effective way of actually getting what we want. We can be aware of the fleeting nature of these emotional storms. You know, they come and they feel like this is all I'm going to ever feel for the rest of my life. But, of course, that's not true. Everything changes all of the time, and we see that very directly through the power of meditation. So it's a really big attention training.
Well, it's been really interesting and a great discussion, Sharon, and maybe as we close out our discussion today, you can just leave us with a few tips on how one can learn to love your enemies, whether it's internal or external.
Well, in the book, there are a bunch of meditation exercises, some from me, some from Bob, reflecting, you know, very different styles, which is good because it's like an experiment to see what you like. And then, of course, there's a tremendous amount of resources online and elsewhere. I think it is good to undertake it as an experiment to see what you feel comfortable with and what makes sense to you, and then just pursue it.
Well, Sharon, I can't get away from the title of the book. It certainly attracted my attention, Love Your Enemies. I mean, there's nothing to mistake about that title. What is it you hope that readers are going to get from the book?
I think it's the possibility of looking really differently. You know, some of the things we think, and we're almost culturally trained to, like, resent this, you know, this experience of difficulty, you know, hate it as though it were an enemy, be afraid of this, or to have a sense of compassion for someone means you're weak. You know, all of those are just ideas that we've been given, and I am very confident that we can all break free of those and see our lives in a different way.
Well, it never hurts to take a second look at how we're doing things. Sharon, thanks so much. It's really been interesting.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts. You can click on the transcript section of the website. You can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Finally, we would love it if you could leave a comment, good, bad, or indifferent, in the reply section of the podcast. Thanks again.